From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for October 8th, 2021. The Brewers host the Atlanta Braves in the NLDS playoffs this weekend. And the Packers are on the road Sunday in Cincinnati with the Bengals. NASA is looking for a new vehicle, one that will shuttle astronauts the 9 miles from their crew quarters to the launch pad. One of the leading contenders is, and I'm not making this up, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. I'll bet Elon Musk wishes he thought of that. Whatever happened to honor among thieves? Ransomware gangs are complaining that other malware crooks are stealing their ransoms. Hey, Sparky, what goes around comes around. The Ukraine's Ministry of Defense has ordered female soldiers to march in high heels. They have to march in high heels? That's a piece of cake. As a legendary dance partner, Ginger Rogers, once said, "I do everything the man does, only backwards and in high heels." Our goofy headline of the week comes from the Bozeman, Montana Daily Chronicle. Local high school dropouts cut in half. Let's close out today with a change of pace. It's a good news story. A principal at a Philadelphia elementary school ordered pizza for 400 students after the food service staff didn't show up. That's just one teacher of many that deserves to be recognized. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Kendall Bauer, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty good week after the early in the week sell-off here. NASDAQ up 0.1% this week, tacking on 13 points to close at 14,580. The S&P Stock Composite 500 rose 0.8%, climbing 34 points to close at 43.91. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed today at 34,747, a 1.2% advance for the week, tacking on 420 points. Year-to-date, what's not to like? The Dow's up 15.1%, S&P up 18.2%, tech-heavy NASDAQ coming in third place, up 13.7%. You know, Kyle, let's start with a simple tool that analysts use to discount future cash flow. Been asked, hey, Bob, you know, explain to me again why tech stocks sell off more than the broader markets when interest rates are going up. The answer is pretty straightforward. That's because we discount future cash flow by a higher interest rate, which results in a lower current value for a company.
And of course, I think keep in mind that a dollar today is always going to be worth a little more than a dollar tomorrow for a variety of reasons. But one of the most important is that if you get that dollar today, you can choose to invest it. You can choose to put it in a savings account or a CD, earn a little bit of money, hopefully. And so I think the core of the principle is that you'd rather have a dollar today than dollar in the future. And as that relates to growth stocks, you look at why people are so willing to pay up for growth. It's because there's immense possibility for earnings growth, as implied in the name, for earnings growth in the future. And of course, the challenge is, what should you be willing to pay for that growth? If the alternatives are pretty poor, right? If you can't get good returns on safe money, if you can't get good returns on interest rates, you're willing to pay a little bit more potentially for that money in the future. The further rates go, the higher rates go, the less you're willing to pay today because the alternatives look a little more attractive. And so what we've seen in growth markets when rates do rise the way they rose this week is that we tend to see a bit of a sell-off, or at least a bit more steady hand compared to the rest of the markets. And it's absolutely what we saw this week with the NASDAQ with respect to the NASDAQ compared to the Dow Jones. Again, I think anytime you see rates rise, it's going to make everybody question, okay, is there a better alternative than paying up for growth? Because that dollar today now looks a little more attractive.
Facebook got clobbered on Monday for different reasons, I think, than higher interest rates.
Yeah, of course, the Facebook issue is one that we've been talking about now for a couple of years. And in part, it's that they've become such a big part of our lives that when their services go down, as they did early in the week, it becomes a pretty big question. You add in some of the privacy concerns that continue to exist with Facebook, some of the testimony on Facebook that took place this week. And I think it's clear that there is some potential for political action, some potential for legal action in terms of how we regulate Facebook in the future. And so, one of their big focuses has been trying to capture younger users. And it's clear now that there are some, I think, significant social costs to that when you look at, what younger users have gotten in terms of Instagram, issues with their personal appearances and those kinds of things. And so I think as we look at what that means for Facebook down the road, I think it does call into question what future earnings growth looks like. And again, if you either raise interest rates and make those future earnings a little less attractive, or you change your expectation for future earnings, all that has an impact on what you're willing to pay today.
I'm not on Facebook. I don't get the concept. I personally just use the telephone to call my friends. Seems to work okay.
Yeah, I think the challenge, of course, is that they somehow have gathered north of a billion users around the world, and so while those of us that try to stay off of those kinds of things don't have the issues that we saw this week with Facebook, I think the younger demographic certainly has been pulled into it a bit more, and often to the detriment of their mental health. I fit into that same bucket.
I got from that.
Yeah, I think I'm right behind you. And I've never understood quite the concept of having privacy concerns on a system that you're voluntarily broadcasting your life.
Hey, Dave, the market is still down a little over 4% since the record highs on September 2nd. We all know, of course, that September and October tend to be volatile months for the markets. But the question that I'm getting asked every day is, when is a correction coming? They're pretty hard to forecast.
Yeah, Bob, I think, it's been obvious now that we've been in some very calm territory since the bottom of the pandemic. And, typically we would experience, on average, maybe 3-5% dips a year. You get a 10% correction, every 16 to 18 months. And we've avoided that. And I think it really does bring people to start wondering, looking over their shoulder, right? When is it coming? And I'm not sure that, just because you haven't had one in a while is a good reason to expect that it's going to show up in your lap tomorrow. As we've been proven in the past, these things can go on for quite a while. Markets can stay elevated, perhaps maybe even to levels that you're not comfortable with for a long time. So, I think it's just, going back to our core principles, and that is stay balanced in the accounts. If you have some immediate cash needs and we're bouncing off a record highs, great time to trim some winners. But certainly not a time to make, giant changes in your plan or your strategy just because you feel like something might be on the horizon.
We know historically that stocks tend to be more volatile when the Fed's heading towards higher interest rates. We certainly saw that in the fall of 2018. The Fed now admits that the rate hikes that we saw in the fall of 18 were a mistake. Stocks were down 19% that fall. That's a lot. Just a hair below what we classify as a bear market. And of course, all that got reversed as the Fed started lowering rates in early 2019, market up 31% that year. So Kendall, let me throw this one to you. We're just on the cusp of the Fed starting to taper next month, as you know. They've hinted that they're thinking about raising the overnight rate sometime next spring. What advice do you have for investors?
Yeah, a lot of conversations that I've been getting to about when interest rates are going to get raised. And what I always circle back to with clients is why it's important to keep an eye on duration. Trying to stay lower on that duration scale, right, is going to protect you a little bit when there's an interest rates. You don't want to be way out on that spectrum where you're facing more risk. So circling back with clients about keeping duration low, staying high quality, and again, like Dave said, making sure portfolio is properly balanced. And again, I've been also getting questions, regarding corrections, and I've used that as an opportunity to you know, verify with clients if they have RMDs, if they have been met. Now might be a good time to maybe look at trimming some of the winners off and satisfying that RMD and try not to let that run too late towards the end of the year. So,
all good advice. Joel, we had an employment report that came out this morning. Maybe the top line number, a little disappointing, 194,000 new jobs versus the 500,000 that the analysts were expecting. I mean, that's not even close. But, you know, if you look a little closer in the report, number one, the unemployment rate fell to 4.8%. And it's not what we've been seeing the last year or so where people have been dropping out of the workforce. I mean, it's just the opposite now. We've got more people that are employed. So all in all, maybe not a terrible report.
I agree, Bob. You know, it's sometimes not a good idea to put too much stock in those headline numbers and the headlines. You know, analysts say that, you know, we're going to create 500,000 jobs this month and it's only 194. But if you take the last...
Do you think they get paid on accuracy?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so because we wouldn't hear from them again.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you take the last 3 months, it's averaged right about, you know, the 560,000 jobs that we've averaged every month this year so far. So, but yeah, there are some really good numbers. That 4.8% unemployment rate, just to put that in perspective. So think of April of 2020, we had a record high of 14.8% unemployment, and now we're down below 5%. It took 6.5 years to get under 5% back in the Great Recession, back in the after the financial collapse. So, you know, it's another reminder that this economy is really recovering quickly from the recession that started with the pandemic. And we're not there yet. We still, the report today said we still have 5 million jobs that we didn't have, you know, we're still short 5 million jobs, you know, from when the pandemic first started. We've got 2 million more people out of work who are looking for jobs than we had before the pandemic started. So we still have some progress to make, but we're making progress.
Kyle, we talk about this one pretty often. You know, besides being asked about a pending correction, it's, hey, Bob, what's up with inflation? Should I worry about it? You know, we talked about the transitory effect of inflation. Most analysts think the rate's going to come way down next year, but it's being kind of stubborn.
Yeah, so let's start with the idea that one of the reasons why inflation has taken off is because we're coming off of comparison points, right? We talk about base effect or what the previous year looked like. We're coming off of comparison points that were incredibly weak, and so it only makes sense that any kind of price improvement or any kind of price increase is going to be significant compared to a year ago where nothing was going on in the economy. But beyond that, moving beyond simply the comparison, when you look at all of the signs that would typically point to expectations for higher inflation, we're not seeing significant spikes. We saw the 10-year move a little bit higher this week, certainly, but the rate of the 10-year Treasury remains incredibly low at roughly 1.6% right now. You know, you go back to periods when inflation was a real problem, the 10-year Treasury was far higher. The break-even inflation rate on Treasury inflation-protected securities, another pretty important indicator to look at. It tells us what the market really thinks inflation is going to be over the next 10 years, or there's other time periods as well you can measure, but they just aren't pointing to longer-term inflationary problems right now. They're pointing to inflation that maybe is higher than what it was, but we came out of an environment in which inflation just wasn't a concern. And so to get back to an environment where inflation is maybe at 2 or 2.1 or 2.2 for a while, you know, the Fed talked about symmetrical inflationary targets, that idea that inflation had to run a little higher than 2 for a while to get the long-term average back to 2. They're going to be okay with inflation at 2.1 or 2.2 for a while. And if we can keep it in check around there, you know, I don't think that's a particularly threatening level to the economy. I don't think it signals that, you know, you need to see significant rate increases. I think it signals that things are healthy, that there's some things that we still need to digest in terms of supply chain issues, in terms of some employment issues, Joel, which you touched on. You know, I think as we continue to digest those problems, you enter an environment in which more people are willing to come in and compete on price. And right now, you just don't have a lot of people that can do that. And that's the wonderful thing about free markets is, in a world in which somebody can charge $10 for something, there's going to be somebody else that realizes they can make it for less and charge $9. And that's one of the reasons why productivity and technology have driven costs down, not up over time. But right now, with production as difficult as it is to come by, with distribution as difficult as it is to come by, you don't have a lot of people that are willing to put their neck on the line to step in and take demand because they're not sure they're going to be able to fill it for a long period of time. And so as we resolve those problems, as workers are more readily available, as we figure out what it's supposed to cost to do business, you're going to get more people willing to step in and say, yeah, I know that they're charging $10 for this box of cereal. I'm going to charge $9. Or for this widget, I'm going to charge $9. And that ultimately puts some checks on inflation that I think longer term is what we should be expecting.
You know, and I think, Kyle, that, you know, we're tough on the Fed. I'm tough on the Fed. But this is a difficult environment when you're talking about the disruptions that have been created by the pandemic. And I think the big challenge for them is right now is what is really going to be baseline inflation when we can strip out some of these supply chain disruptions, right? I mean, we got the shipping issues. We have computer chip issues. A lot of these things that have been created by the pandemic, and to be able to strip that out and then come to a consensus on what more of a baseline inflation number is difficult.
Well, and let's be clear here that inflation is a good thing for businesses as well because it means they can increase their prices. And so as we look out at earnings forecasts, for example, for the next year, just rolling over from the second quarter into the third quarter reporting now and looking out into, you know, the second half of next year, we added $6 or $7 a share to S&P 500 earnings. It took the forward P on the S&P 500 from 21 point something down to about 20 and a half right now. And that's despite the fact that it was a good week for stocks. And so as you look at what the expectations really are for inflation, remember that a little bit of inflationary pressure is a great thing for corporate profitability. As long as they can pass on those prices to their consumers, as long as they can continue to operate, you know, a little bit's a good thing. A lot's when you start to worry, and the signs just aren't there for a lot of inflation.
You know, folks, the reason why we keep talking about this is it is truly all about earnings and interest rates, and inflation is a key driver, can be a key driver for higher interest rates, and it can be problematic for stocks. But at this point in time, my best estimate is that we'll see stubbornly high inflation perhaps through the end of the year into early next year, and then things will start settling down some. Kendall, I want to get back to something you said that I'd like just to expand upon. We were talking about the bond portfolios that you manage and your shortening duration. It took me the longest time to get into my head that when rates are going up, you don't really want to run the cash. You know, that as you pointed out, you want to be in the short to intermediate space for bonds, 3-4 year range, because the higher coupon subsidizes the potential hit you take to the net asset value, and net you wind up doing a little bit better. So I appreciate the fact that you're straddling the line here, as we all are, in trying to manage fixed income portfolios. But, you know, that's truly an important lesson to get across to folks is you don't want to run to cash because cash doesn't pay right now. So even though you think like you're moving in front of the firing squad, it's actually just the reverse that you wind up doing a little bit better there.
Yeah, and I think the other side of that too is people then want to talk about, well, if I'm not earning anything in cash and I'm not happy with what I'm earning based on the duration that we're at right now, why don't we head into high yield, which sparks the other side of the equation with spreads as low as they are. You're just not getting paid to take the risk there. It's better to stay short and take that risk on the stock side of the portfolio. Keep your money high quality short term, and on the fixed income side, keep that as your safe money. I think it's important to talk about both sides of that equation with why sometimes going to cash isn't worth it because you're not getting paid anything, and heading over to high yield or junk bonds isn't worth it because the spreads are low and you're adding a bunch of risk for just trying to eke out a, you know, couple of percentage more return.
Well, we still have plenty to worry about with inflation, of course, COVID, Fed tapering. But what's not to like about returns for the year? Dow up 15, S&P up 18, NASDAQ up almost 14. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.